Hi, thank you for joining us in this Microsoft Power BI Embedded Learning video series. I am Saptarshi Mukherjee, Senior Product Marketing Manager for Microsoft Power BI Embedded, and today we are joined by Josh Kaplan.
Yep, I'm the Senior Program Manager for Power BI Embedded.
And today in this video, we're going to talk about how do you essentially architect the Microsoft Power BI Embedded service in Azure. How do you define workspaces and workspace collection, and how does that align with your application architecture? And Josh is going to take us through that process. So Josh, in the previous videos, we saw how to build a compelling report and how to embed that report inside an app. But it's important to understand what are the best practices in terms of creating Power BI embedded artifacts inside Azure. So why don't you take us through those elements?
Yep. So one of the first things to note is that Power BI embedded is an Azure service. It's an Azure resource, just like anything else in Azure, blob storage, Azure websites, you know, SQL Azure. This is just another resource that you can use when you're building applications using Azure. So it follows a lot of the same rules as Azure. Now, when you come in, you can see on my screen here, I have our conceptual model up. You know, as a developer, you'll have an Azure subscription, or your company may have an Azure subscription. Your company may have a lot of Azure subscriptions. And within those subscriptions, you can now purchase a resource, what we call a workspace collection. The workspace collection is our top level Azure resource. I kind of equate it to storage accounts, where you know you have blob storage, and then above that, you have storage accounts. This is where you pick which location in the world it goes into. It's where all your API keys are going to be managed. It's also the line item that shows up on your bill. This is kind of your container for all the stuff you're going to do in Power BI. Now, under that, we have what we call our workspaces. And we wanted to give you a little way to just to subdivide the content even further, so we didn't just give you one big container, you have to shove everything into it. So we created these things called workspaces, and this is where your reports and your data sets are going to live. And you have as many of these as you want within your workspace collections. You can kind of think of them like folders, or if I go back to the analogy of blob store, you have the storage accounts, These would be the blobs. You can put your content into there, and that's where you can go ahead and then embed from there. There's no real guidance of, okay, you must always do, every time you create a company, you must give them their own workspace, or every user must have their own workspace, or you put everything in one. There's no major guidance there. It's more about what best works for your application, how your application is architected. And it really depends on what your application does in a lot of cases. Now, I can tell you some of the history behind this, the reason we decided to have these multiple levels. We wanted to make sure, obviously, this is as easy as possible for you just to create your content, and you can place it wherever you want within your app. Your app really controls how the content is displayed to the end user, not any of these containers. But we wanted to make sure that if you wanted to keep, let's say you have a bunch of customers, and you want to keep them some physical separation between them, you could still create one workspace collection and then have multiple workspaces or multiple little containers under there for each customer. That would kind of give you some sort of physical separation. The advantage of having multiple workspaces instead of having multiple workspace collections is that the API keys and all kind of the shared components are all still managed at the workspace collection level. So you only have to have one set of API keys, and you'd have maybe 1,000 workspaces under there. You can use those same API keys for all 1,000 workspaces, roll them for all 1,000 workspaces, and you don't have to have, it's a little bit easier to manage than having to manage that for every single workspace. But that said, there's no, you know, you can do that. You can create multiple workspaces for every single customer if you wanted to, or you can put everything into one, just one, and that would work fine as well too. And obviously, we've shown in some of the other videos that you can secure this with our app tokens. So even if every one of your customers is looking into the same workspace, you can then actually use the app tokens to subset what they can see inside there anyway. So it's really more how your app is architected, what you feel comfortable with, where you want to build these separations. In most cases, it does not matter as much about how you set these up, because again, your app is the one that's presenting. There are some cases where there are advantages to having certain things in different workspace collections, and really that comes around to just where your users are. So we actually flip over to the map, and where your users are can dictate where potentially you should put your workspace collections. Remember, the workspace collection is the level where we actually control the physical location on the planet Earth. So if you have users here, you have some users over here, you know, over here, you're going to want to create a workspace collection, you know, closest to them. So you might actually create their own workspace collection, you know, in the data centers in the US, which we have three different data centers to choose from, or where else in the world they happen to be. Now that can get you faster performance because the users are actually sitting closer to the data centers themselves. But if your app, if you set up workspace collections here, here, and here, but your data is just sitting over here, and the rest of your application's sitting over here, you might not get too much of a benefit by just putting the reports closer. So I would always suggest building workspace collections the way your app is architected. So for example, if I have an instance of my app for all the different regions around the world where I have users, I would have a workspace collection in each of those instances. If I only have one instance of my app for every user in the world, I'd have just one workspace collection in there. And then we actually do some things inside Power BI itself to actually route users to the closest front-end server. So we actually serve the reports out of the data center that's closest to them. Even if you didn't put the workspace collection there, the front-end pieces of it would actually serve from the place closest to them. All the back-end stuff, though, all the data, all the secure pieces, the things that you might want to keep within a specific country, would still serve out of the location of where you made that workspace collection. It just means that all the controls that we have to download the report, to eventually render the report in the user's browser, would download a little bit faster because that's closer to the user, but all the actual specific content, specific data still has to come from wherever that workspace collection originates. But I mean, this is really the only use case where I would think you'd want to start to split things up and have multiple workspace collections. The main driving one where you actually get some better performance potentially. And you know, I like to think of Power BI Embedded just like I would think of any other resource in Azure. So I wouldn't do anything special for Power BI Embedded in most cases. I would use probably the same techniques that I do to optimize other parts of my application when I think about where I'm going to place things around the world and how I'm going to spread out my resources.
Right. So the developer has complete control where they want to put the workspace in Azure. And how do they do that? Like, do they get into Azure Admin Portal and select the workspace collection? Can we see that in action?
Yeah, there's a few things you can do. You can definitely do what you said, go into the Azure portal, create these things. When you do start to have more than one, and you start to have a lot more than one, doing it manually is not going to be realistic.
Yep.
You're also typically not going to deploy your production stuff by manually going into a UI and logging in and rolling those things out. So anything you can do in the UI, again, can be automated. So let's look at the non-automated way first and just go back to the UI. And I'm just in the regular Azure portal. So if you go to portal.azure.com, log in. You'll see a similar view to what I see. You can click on New, and under Data and Analytics, you'll see Power BI Embedded. Clicking on that will bring up the Power BI Workspace Collection creation blade. And here you can name your workspace collections. Now the names are actually globally unique across Azure. They're used in our routing, you'll see them in the URLs. So you need to pick something that'll be unique, and also pick something that you don't mind people seeing, because again, it's in the routing, it's in the URL, so don't use any top secret code names or anything like that. So I'll name it something like that, and we'll validate for you before you go ahead that it is actually unique. And I can pick which subscription it goes on. I can pick which resource group I put it in, or I can use an existing one. So pick that one. And I can pick which location I want to put it in. So again, these are all the different data centers that we have available right now. And I can pick, you know, one closest to me or the one closest to my users. And that's about it. I can go ahead and say create. This is going to go ahead and create that workspace collection for me. Now when it opens up, it's not going to have any workspaces in it. I'll create those to the API. And then I'll deploy all my content to it from the API as well. Now, everything I just showed you here can also be done through Azure ARM APIs, as well as the Azure SDK and the Azure PowerShell. Any of the Azure tools out there that can work with the Resource Manager can do just what I showed you here. So I'll show you first, if you actually come in here and you click on Getting Started, we have an SDK and we have some samples you can download. When you actually go ahead and open up the sample, you'll see in the sample there are two samples. One is an actual website that you can embed a report into, so we give you the full-blown web application. This is kind of like the app you would be building. And the other one is this provision sample, stuff that rolls all the code out, deploys all your content, creates all the Azure resources. So they're both in there. And if I go ahead and I actually run that provision sample, you'll see the options that are available.
And a lot of the ones you'll see are the ones we just did in the UI. So I can provision a new workspace collection, what we just did to the UI. I can get that workspace collection metadata back. I can get the API keys, all these things you can do in the UI, some of them I just showed. Now I can do through either the SDK, through our REST APIs, the ARM REST APIs, or I'll show you one other thing. Let's create one actually using PowerShell.
Wow, this is really powerful.
I like to think it's actually nothing special because it's Azure. It's what you can do with any other resource. So a lot of people actually already have scripts out there, applications out there that are provisioning their Azure DBs, provisioning their Azure websites. So provision a workspace collection along with it, dump your Power BI content in there, all automatable. You know, you don't have to change the way you've been doing these processes.
For the rest of the Azure service,
correct.
Pretty much.
Yep. So I'm gonna look at a really, really short PowerShell script. And in here, we're just logging into the Azure Resource Manager. I'm creating a new resource group. It's gonna be called RG2. I'm picking the location for that resource group. And then we're gonna create a new workspace collection. I'm gonna name it Joe Kaplan PS1. And I'll put it in that resource group we created. I'm gonna use the same location of that resource group. Once it's created, I'm gonna go ahead and get the API keys automatically and display that back. So it's just a couple lines of code there. It's very, very short, very simple. I can go back to PowerShell. I actually open that script up and run it right in PowerShell itself. It's gonna ask me to log into Azure. All this is also automatable. If you look at some of the tricks you can do with PowerShell, in case your deployments are running in an unattended mode. And there it goes, I went ahead and created the resource group, created the workspace collection, and returned both of my API keys. So now if I go back to the Azure portal, and I look at my resource groups, see our resource group in there, and I look at the stuff that's in the resource group, I see a workspace collection called Joe Kaplan PS1. And if we actually go look at the API keys that are there, you'll see the two API keys that are there should match the ones that were returned in PowerShell. So that was done through PowerShell, can be done through the APIs, can be done through manually through the UI itself.
Perfect. So if I summarize, where you create the workspace depends on your application architecture, where your users are. And once you know that, then essentially you can programmatically provision the workspaces inside Azure for Power BI Embedded.
You can programmatically provision, and you can also programmatically manage your deployments. So if you have a dev environment, a test environment, a production environment, or multiple production environments, you automate that whole SDLC, the whole workflow of getting code moved from one place to another and then finally out to your users into production.
Sure. So we learned about deploying the workspaces, and then how do you put reports, the Power BI reports that you have created using the Power BI desktop inside the workspace?
Yeah, so the way you create the reports in the desktop, like you mentioned, and now the way you can get them into Power BI itself is through the API. Now, we have in that same sample, we have the steps of uploading the reports. So let's actually go ahead and we'll do it in this new one we created. I'm gonna go back to that provision sample. I'm gonna go ahead and say, start new instance. And we've created our workspace collection. We've gotten our API keys. So let's import a Power BI desktop file to that. So we'll do step 6. Take the workspace collection name. And what I'll do is I'll take the one we just created, which was this Joe Kaplan PS1. Well, what we didn't do? We created a workspace collection, we didn't create a workspace. So we created the overall container, we didn't actually create the subcontainers or the workspaces where we're gonna put the content in.
Sure.
So let's actually do that. So we actually have a place to put our reports. Again, I can create one, I can create 100. It really depends on how I'm gonna structure my users and the content for them. So let's go back into this, and let's actually go ahead and provision a new workspace, which is step 5. Give it the workspace collection name again, and it's going to ask for the access key, the API key. We returned it in PowerShell earlier. I can also go grab it from the UI. And our workspace is created. We have our workspace ID there. If I go back to Azure portal, reload the page, I'll see I now have one workspace created with that ID. So we got the place to put the report now. Let's actually put the report into it. So now we can do step 6. It's going to ask for a display name, what I want to call the report when I upload it. Let's call it sales report. And the file path for that report. Also helps to close the file before you upload it. Otherwise, it can't be accessed. So let's do that real quick. Now I'll do step 6. And what this is going to do, it's going to call our import API. It's going to take the file, and it's going to asynchronously upload it, because sometimes files are big and they can take a little bit of time. So it's going to go submit the file to us, it's going to get an ID back, and then you can go and check using that ID. Okay, is it done yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? And that's what you can kind of see happening here in the UI. You see one where the import state is publishing, which means it's still going, and you see one where the import state has succeeded, which means it's done, it's ready to go. We give you back the import ID. If you were to call these APIs manually, or even in the SDK, we do show you some of this. When you do a get on that import ID and you get the information back, you'll see what was created from it, which reports, what those IDs were, what the embed URL was for that report. And then you can really, based off the response of import, you really have all the information you need, then go ahead and embed the report. You don't actually have to make calls to Power BI later to discover that information. So now the report's there. Now, the report I happened to upload was using direct query, so it's directly talking to a SQL Azure database in this case. And it needs to be able to communicate to that database. And I actually built it against the development environment. So I was using a different version of the SQL DB. I don't have actually access to the production one when I'm developing. For some reason, they don't like to let me develop against production. So when I had the file, it's actually pointing to the dev instance. I need to now point it to the production instance. So I can do that by updating the connection string, which is step 7 in here. Also, as part of that, I need to give it credentials so that Power BI knows how to talk to that database. So I can give it a new username and password. And this would be the service account that's going to be used to communicate to that database. And again, you would automate this all as part of your deployment, most likely. And again, now I can give it that connection string. And this, again, is how the sample works. You can call the APIs really in any order. If you are calling the APIs manually, you'll want to set your connection strings first, then update the credentials, because we store credentials per database. And if you change your database, you're going to need to set a different set of credentials for that new database. Give it a connection string. And the way the connection string actually works, I'll show an example of it right here. Now, it's just a SQL connection string, but it's in this format. And we have this posted up in our documentation. It'll just be your data source, your initial catalog, and if you're persisting the security information, set these all on. And you can go ahead and you can actually change the connection string here. Now it'll be pointing to production. I've also seen a lot of people go ahead and actually have different, you can actually use the same report multiple times in production, again, different databases that have the same structure, so almost like a template. So I've actually seen a lot of people do that with this connection string API. Mm-hmm. So they'll create the report once, they'll have like 7 different databases all with different data, but the same structure, and they'll just repoint the reports to each one as those come online.
Right.
So we have now a fully functioning report in Power BI workspace with the proper connection string, with all the credentials set, so now someone can go in and start using it after you've gone ahead and embedded it.
Perfect. So that's really helpful for you to understand how to create workspaces and workspace collections, how to export the report from your local desktop into the workspace collection, and then embed that inside your app. How do we monitor usage of those reports? How do the application developer get to know how many times people are viewing their reports? Because there's a direct cost implication.
So one thing to remember is you're actually the one rendering the report or calling the report to be rendered, so you're issuing those app tokens. Another reason you might want to keep app tokens shorter so you can actually, you know, control how many times someone will go ahead and render. Once the app tokens expires, they can't render it again on their own end. But one thing is you can put some telemetry in your app itself and just count how many times the page gets loaded. The other thing is that all the renders will be metered and they'll be going through the Azure billing. So you can, through the Azure UI, you can go see, let me actually open up something that actually has some renders. And you can see the number of renders that have happened. And we're actually in the middle of a transition right now. So we're moving from an old render model, which was visual based. That was kind of our preview pricing. And on September 1st of 2016, we're moving to this session based one. So actually, when you look in Azure right now, you see the old and the new. But so you'll see there's some tiles in here that show you the number of visual renders. And then after 9.1, there'll be a tile that shows you all the report session renders, which is the pricing model going forward. So again, you can see it in the UI, but again, anything you can do in the UI, you can do through APIs. So we have APIs you can call and monitor these numbers as they're ticking up as well.
So this is at a workspace level?
This is at a workspace collection level.
Workspace collection level.
Perfect. That's where your build is at the workspace collection level.
Right. So if I have an Azure subscription as an ISV and I have multiple customers and I want to bill them separately, then the path could be to have those reports for a specific customer under a specific workspace collection.
You could, but you can also go ahead and, like you said, monitor that from your own end because you're rendering the reports and you could see from your own telemetry who's using what, and you could actually charge that way, which might be lighter weight than having to have multiple
workspace collections.
Okay. Yeah, and if you have thousands and thousands of customers, you may not want thousands and thousands of line items in your bill either.
That is true. That's true. So hopefully this explains the concept of how do you manage workspaces and how do you see and monitor usage of Power BI against your Azure subscriptions. Thank you for joining us in this video. And thank you, Josh, for helping us with the basic concepts of how to get started with workspaces and workspace collections.
Thank you.